potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movie, Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, as well as the new series, Tales from the Loop, and Future Man Season 3, and a look back at the classics Tron and its sequel, Tron Legacy. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Some of these movies that have been delayed indefinitely are now getting slotted release dates. A Quiet Place Part 2, which was one of the first movies to get pulled from the slate anyways, because it was supposed to come out in March. A Quiet Place Part 2 has been rescheduled for Labor Day weekend, which I look at that as a bit hopeful, because I think that movie studios and the movie business itself has looked ahead and said, okay, they're going to look at this realistically. They're not dealing with the politics of, trying to balance the economy with closing things down. They're looking at it saying, realistically, how long are we going to be shut down? And I'm hoping that Hollywood, from that business decision, is saying, okay, we're pretty sure that hopefully this thing will be wrapped up by the end of the summer. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm hoping to God that Wonder Woman 1984 also comes out in August and these don't get pushed to a Christmas release. Like the SpongeBob movie was announced, I think it's going to Christmas. I think the Minions movie is being bumped into next summer. But the fact that The Quiet Place is going to come out Labor Day weekend, I think is great. I just hope that we're out of this mess that we're in right now by then. Here's the reality is in terms of, at least for me, being from Ohio, where we did an early lockdown, this has been only going on for a couple weeks, guys. This really started, it was pretty much a good chunk of March, but it really didn't go into a full lockdown until like St. Patrick's Day. We're looking at all the way through May, into May, and possibly through June. I mean, obviously, there's always the worry of another uptick, and there's worry about will they be able to actually get a vaccine earlier? There's, you know, because everyone's throwing double duty onto this. The summer may be a wash for movies, but hopefully by August, September, we're getting back into things. And at least that looks like what they're trying to do with A Quiet Place, drop that right into September, and hopefully things will be kind of back to normal by then. In the meantime, it's interesting that I'm going to vent a little bit about something, because this is news in my line of work, which is radio and movies. Okay. So fortunately, I am lucky enough that I can do my job still. And there's a lot of technology that allows me to do that from the safety of my own home and to continue to work and to continue to get on the air and talk to everybody and hopefully provide a certain degree of escapism from the crazy stuff happening in the world. But, you know, like my wife's a teacher, so she's working with distance learning, and she's got an office set up where she's down there doing office hours and helping kids, and they're doing all the connections through the technology, which is actually kind of great. I mean, I think it's kind of amazing what some of these schools are doing to put distance learning into place. But in terms of me doing distance, I guess, you know, what, distance pontificating? I'm going to just tell you what I think. You can still hear me. I can still do the radio spots and that sort of thing. But the problem is, obviously, I'm not going to movies. Their movie houses are shut down. The closest you can get is a drive-in. That's a great way to watch movies and still socially distance yourself. I would suggest if you are going to try and go to a drive-in theater, I would at least see if they have a website or something that you can check their policy, particularly when it comes to bathrooms. A lot of them have shut down the actual concession bar, so you can't congregate there. But you want to know what you have to do if you have to go to the bathroom. But there's been some lack of traction from some studios in getting releases to be reviewed for online stuff, because they're not used to that. They're used to just doing the screenings and that's it. And these studios have to look at this the way the recession in 2008 was. Back then, I used to write for a newspaper in the early 2000s, and one of the things a recession did is it caused a lot of businesses to reevaluate the means by which they do business. And in particular, when I was writing for a newspaper, they were saying, do we need to actually still have a print edition? And when the money started to dry up in the advertising department, which is what happens during a recession, it caused the editors and the publishers to look at this and say, well, how they kept cutting the pages on the circular I was in. I was in this little entertainment insert, and it went from something like 32 pages down to like 8 at one point, I think. And at a certain point, they just say, okay, we're going to discontinue this. And, you know, I lost the job that way. But movie theaters and movie studios in particular have to look and say, okay, if these things are going to start to be more viable to go straight to online and on, like, on demand, like VOD and even stuff like, to go to a service, they need to be able to get it out there to be reviewed by the press. And the fact that it's sometimes been hard to get that done is frustrating to me to no end, because they're like, well, you're in Columbus and we're not opening a Columbus. I go, no, you're not opening in Columbus. You're opening on demand. It's nationwide, for crying out loud. In the old PR world, it was like, well, you're a Columbus critic. But you know, I talked to you guys all over the country and all over the world through the internet and through the many stations that I'm on. I mean, God bless Hulu and Amazon Prime and Netflix, because they know how the streaming stuff works. So the streaming giants, they can provide me with stuff that I can look at and then actually watch and then review and be able to tell you guys about it and promote it for them. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. We're getting to the point where there's not a whole lot of new trailers out because nobody's actively marketing movies. So there's a couple of them I want to hit. One of them is from Amazon Prime. It's a new TV series coming out on May 1st. It's called Upload.
His vitals are dropping. We're losing him.
Do we really want to upload?
We could be together forever.
You're so amazing. But forever is just like so long.
3, 2, 1. Upload. Hello, Nathan. 10 fingers and toes?
Pretty seamless.
This is the first day of the rest of your afterlife. Welcome to Lakeview. Uplifting views, timeless Americana.
New guy coming through.
This is brought to you by, it was Greg Daniels. I think he's the guy who did The Office and Parks and Rec. I mean, he didn't create The Office. Obviously, Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant did, but he worked on these other series. And it looks interesting, about a guy who's going to die and his consciousness is uploaded into this matrix, essentially. The teaser trailer doesn't give you a whole lot of idea of how much comedy there is, because it spends so much time getting through the high concept, almost Pixar related element to the show. But I'm intrigued by it. The one problem that I see, and this is going to sound really weird, the guy in it is almost too good looking. I mean, he's a very attractive guy, to the point that he doesn't have the adorkability that pretty much everybody else on both Parks and Rec and The Office, which are name checked in the trailer, have. I mean, Amy Poehler's not a bad looking woman. She's a very attractive woman, but she's not like model gorgeous. She's quirky. She's weird. And that really worked. You know, Steve Carell is a good looking guy, but he's still kind of weak, dorky. John Krasinski, he's kind of dorky. Everybody in those shows, they were weird and different, and they had a certain amount of adorkability. This one looks like they're casting some more attractive people, which may not work in comedy. So I'll be curious to see how this one goes. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Robert the Bruce, which is opening on VOD on April 24th.
Robert the Bruce, you want the one thing you cannot have: to be William Wallace, to be loved as he was. And that is why you will not become King of Scotland.
Any man who breaks the head of Robert the Bruce shall receive 50 gold pieces.
That is a reward.
We'll have it for ourselves.
This is the second Robert the Bruce movie we've had in a couple of years. There was one called Outlaw King on Netflix starring Chris Pine. This one stars Agnes McFadden. This looks like it's a little bit more low-key than the Outlaw King was trying to be a little more epic. So I don't know. I'll be curious. This one has my attention. And that's it for the trailer park. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Tron and Tron Legacy.
I believe in miracles.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with a couple of vintage ones. And one of these being vintage kind of kills me because it's 10 years old. And I don't feel like it's 10 years old. But let's talk about the first one. And that is Tron. A brilliant computer programmer finds himself blasted into a virtual digital world where he tries to hunt for critical information.
I still do not understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence.
Hey, 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 it's the big master control program everybody's been talking about.
Kevin Flynn, computer genius. Taken prisoner and held captive within the digital world of the computer itself.
This movie came out in 1982, and I remember it. I was in, I think, fifth grade at the time. And this was still when Disney was kind of still doing the epics. They did The Black Hole a couple of years before that, but, you know, they wanted to make this the big family exciting epic movie, like, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and that sort of thing. What's interesting is I've watched this several times over the years. I remember seeing it as a kid. I remember seeing it in 70 millimeter. Of course, the computer world was shot in 70 millimeter and it looked fantastic on the big screen. I remember when Tron Legacy came out, the DVD of this went out of print and people were buying it for $100. But I've always had a soft spot for Tron. It's not a great story. I mean, the story is kind of goofy and silly and it bends reality more than even a movie like this should. But it does have that level of epicness. Now, if you're under 30, you might watch this movie and think it looks stupid. But let me tell you, in 1982, when computers were very, very small, when Apple had their Apple IIe out, which predated Macintosh by half a decade, this thing was blow your mind insane. The digital effects were new. They were brand new. This was very groundbreaking at the time in using the photographic elements to make the suits they were wearing look computer generated, but also just like the light bike sequence and the space paranoids flying around. Like I said, there was not much of a story here. The story was kind of goofy and doesn't make a whole lot of sense anyways, because you've got David Warner playing the evil corporate raider who screwed Kevin Flynn, played by Jeff Bridges, out of his programs that he created, but he pretended that he created, and then he built this company. And the whole point is he needed to get this piece of paper that could easily be forged by any dot matrix printer on the planet that's supposed to show that Flynn created everything. But the adventure has then been getting dropped in this virtual world, and it's silly and it's stupid and has these strange, weird religious overtones to it that Disney was still weaving into their films back in the 80s. But to me, it's a lot of fun because I remember when this was groundbreaking and I can put myself in that mindset. And even though it looks low res now, because it is, it still is a beautiful looking movie, and it was a phenomenon. And I know the movie wasn't a huge hit, but it certainly had an impact on pop culture. And as silly and as corny as the film can get, it's still a lot of fun. It's available on Disney Plus. So if you've got that, I'd say watch it. You know, if you got little kids and you're, like I said, you're under 30, you may not get it, but it's fascinating to me. I'm going to have to say Tron totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Now, I have a group of friends that I know through the internet. We will go and we'll live. We used to do this every week. It used to be on Saturday nights. And we used to live tweet a movie every Saturday night. And I had friends from Texas and New York and San Francisco. We were all over the place. And we'd all get online and we'd it's basically, they have them now. They're basically viewing parties. They call them viewing parties online. You could do the party function on Netflix now. But I was doing it old school back when we just all, you know, hit the same play button at the same time. And I was bored because I hadn't done that for years. And of course, everyone's stuck home. Especially like a couple of the people are in New York City. And so they're just like, well, I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck here. So I contacted them and said, hey, let's live tweet something tonight. So we centered on Tron on Friday night. And then last Saturday night, we did Tron Legacy. Now this week, we are going to do Willow, you know, so we're picking the Disney Plus stuff. We figure as long as it's either Netflix or Disney Plus, or Amazon Prime. Most of the people, most of these film nerds have that going. And we're going to be doing Willow this week. Look for the hashtag. It'll probably say Willow tweet. I don't think anyone else is out there live tweeting Willow. But let's talk about Tron Legacy here, because this came out 10 years ago, and I remember they were highly anticipating this Tron sequel. People forget this predates the Marvel stuff. I mean, Marvel was making movies at the time, but Disney hadn't purchased them yet, and the Avengers hadn't come out yet, because that came out in 2012. This came out Christmas of 2010, and it was a Christmas after Avatar came out. So this was going to be the next big 3D release that never really hit anywhere close to what Avatar had. But it was still an interesting movie. So Tron Legacy, decades after Kevin Flynn disappeared, his son Sam is beamed into the virtual digital world where he must stop a maniacal program.
Your father was the creator. He never thought he'd see you again.
Dad. Sam.
The grid. A place of infinite possibility, more beautiful than I ever dreamed. And more dangerous than I ever imagined.
What am I supposed to do?
Survive.
Of course, with this one, the special effects blow the effects on Tron away. But what I find so warm and friendly about this movie is how much the movie looks back at the effects and extrapolates what they'd be 28 years later. And that really made it feel authentic. That made it feel like this was a sequel to it, even though it, you know, it has that sort of iPod look and feel, that sort of modern computer AirBuds type of look and feel, not the Dayglow look from the 1980s, but the stuff we have now and much more, much more sophisticated stuff. And it works. And I gotta say, you know, even though, again, like this first one, the story's kind of goofy. It's a little bit silly. You really have to stretch your imagination. You have to suspend your disbelief just to get to watch this movie and make it coherent in your own head. Garrett Hedlund's okay as an actor. Olivia Wilde kind of brightens up the mood. And I think it's hilarious how Jeff Bridges just basically plays the dude in this. When he finally shows up. This also was one of the first uses, at least widespread, intense use of the de-aging technology that they've used since then, and the virtual actor technology. Now, of course, we saw that with Peter Cushing in Rogue One back in, what was that, 2016 or something. But, you know, this is still 6 years before that. So Jeff Bridges still, there's a lot of uncanny valley going on in the young Jeff Bridges, which his program Clue was in this movie. But take it in context of when it came out. The imagery is fantastic. The action sequences with the light bikes and the light jets and the disc wars. I mean, all that kind of stuff. It's just a visual feast and amazing to watch, and honestly one of the best soundtracks of that decade. Daft Punk did the soundtrack. They have a little cameo at one point. And you've got Michael Sheen playing one of the goofiest characters he's had this side of the Twilight franchise. I gotta say, I love Tron Legacy. It has a soft spot in my heart. I enjoyed watching it again. I'm probably gonna watch it a couple more times on Disney Plus in the next couple years. So Tron Legacy for me totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Tales from the Loop and Future Man. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into more movie reviews. Well, not movie reviews, actually TV reviews. The first one is dropping on Amazon Prime this weekend. I believe it's dropping all episodes at once. Some of these will leak out. They won't make it a binge watch. Now, Amazon has done that with some of their series. And some of them, they just released all the episodes at the same time. Hulu, of course, like Little Fires Everywhere, which I talked about last week, that is doing them week by week. And FX on Hulu with Devs is also dropping it week to week. So they're forcing you to watch it in slow motion, so to speak. But Tales from the Loop, I think you get all 8 episodes in one fell swoop. And it's a science fiction show, but it's not fully science fiction. I'll explain that in a minute. In the show, a town is built over a machine that is meant to unlock the secrets of the universe, which causes impossible anomalies to collide with everyday life.
What do you do?
When someone says something's impossible, I prove it's possible.
Not everything in life makes sense. One day, many years from now, you'll wonder if this really happened. Or if it was a dream.
Everyone is connected to the loop.
Back in my short story writing days, back in the 90s, when I was publishing in semi-prosing magazines, I kept trying to crack the nut of Analog, which I don't even know if Analog is still around, but it used to be Astounding magazine. It was edited by Stanley Schmidt at the time. And I remember his description of what you needed for a science fiction piece. Because science fiction, especially in the 70s and 80s, really kind of got a little goofy. And one of the things Stanley Schmidt always said, that to make the stuff work for his magazine, when you read his submission guidelines, he basically said, science needs to be integral to the story. You need to be able to tell the story, but if you were to take the science aspect out of it, you wouldn't have a story. Classic example, Frankenstein. Frankenstein, at its core, is a science fiction story. It's a horror, but it's a science fiction story. It's about a guy using science to resurrect the dead. If you take the science aspect out of sewing together bodies and bringing them back to life, you don't have a story. That's the whole point of the movie. Star Wars, Star Trek, these things, you take the science fiction element out of it, and you don't have a story because that's what it's all based on. Whereas if you had a story that takes place in the future, and maybe it's just about a couple getting a divorce, well, you can have a couple getting a divorce. It doesn't matter if it takes place in the future or in the past. So that's the difference. You can't just have science fiction as a backdrop. It has to be integral to the story. Tales from the Loop barely makes it into the science fiction category for something that, like Stanley Schmidt would have said. Because what it does is it takes some weird element, some anomaly that comes out that could only happen in this town that's over this weird mechanism that's supposed to solve the mysteries of the universe. And they don't really explain that anyways. And it allows that to happen, but then it lets it play out in a very mundane, realistic fashion. So like somebody will disappear, like an entire house disappears because of this. And there's like this out of time element to this. And that's the point of the movie, but it's really about a girl trying to find her mom. In this one episode, this guy finds himself duplicated into like a cross dimension. But it's really just about him dealing with meeting somebody who's basically himself. And so it's really an interpersonal story. It's really a human drama with a science fiction as just that jumping off point. Science fiction is still integral to the story, but this is a interpersonal drama. This is not a hard science fiction TV show. This is not Firefly or Star Trek or Battle Beyond the Stars or anything like that. This is very much just people dealing with each other in a tweaked situation, we'll say. And in that sense, that's very well done, and it's very esoteric, and it is very much sort of more of those artsy literary type stories. You got to understand that going in. It's not ray guns and robots. It's really more about the people. It's the human element. And if you want to see that, that's good. It had a little bit too much of that. I wanted a little more science fiction in my science fiction story. But then again, you know, that's just me. So I'm going to have to say Tales from the Loop kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about Future Man season 3. I reviewed the first two seasons, I think, last year sometime, because I had recently gotten to Hulu and I finally watched all the two seasons of it. They're basically soldiers from the future who come back in time and they have created a video game that tests people. And of course, they find the guy who won the video game, but they don't realize that the guy was just using a controller and thought it was a game and really isn't a warrior. And they start bouncing him around time. And like the first season was them jumping around time and playing with time constructs and playing with time cliches, you know, like they're goofing on things like the last Starfighter, which isn't time travel, but it's the same premise of winning a video game and stuff like Back to the Future and that sort of the fun part of it. And it's a comedy. It's produced by Seth Rogen. So it certainly has that raunchy, inappropriate comedy element to it. But, you know, plays with Terminator and that sort of stuff, very self-aware. The second season, they ended up in the future, kind of a post-apocalyptic world. And at the same time, there's like this utopia happening. And this one, they get bumped into the far future. And now we have season three. And in this one, Josh, Tiger, and Wolf find themselves in a futuristic game show, which leads them on a chase across time to set their blunders right again.
We were on a mission.
I wanted to go home to see the people that I love.
I was trying to avenge my fallen comrades.
I wanted to relaunch a fast casual restaurant chain with slightly better food and local bands on the weekends. That can't be it.
Another escape on your watch, St. Jackalope.
As long as they are loose, I'm going to be the one to bring them in.
This is a kill mission. They're fugitives.
Not that it's anything like Doctor Who, but this last season feels a little bit more like a Doctor Who type premise where they land in areas of history and are dealing with that. And a lot of times they're way, way, way back in history. You can tell they're trying to get to an end, and they do have some fun with it, and they do have some absurd, ridiculous stuff that weirdly at times draws from Red Dwarf, the British show. In particular, I think the episodes that it draws from are the stuff from the early to mid-90s. But I find this show funny. I think it feels like it certainly had a place it was going, at least in this season. The second season seemed a little haphazard, and the first season was just its starting point, so they're still trying to figure out where they were going to go and how they were going to tie this in, and then it kind of blew up into something bigger in terms of story-wise. And then the second season, like I said, had trouble finding focus. This one certainly has focus. It takes a little bit of time to get there. I think there's 8 episodes, and it probably could have done it in about 6, but overall, it's a funny show. I mean, I think it clicks better. I think they find where each of the characters are going more properly than they have in the last couple seasons. And it has a good ending. I will say that. You get to the end and it's satisfying. It has some good chuckles in there. You get Seth Rogen actually getting some screen time in this one. And he's funny, but he doesn't hog the spotlight, which is cool. At a certain point, they didn't quite know what to do with Eliza Coop's character because she is kind of a psychopath in the story. So they dismiss her a bit. I mean, it could have been worse. They could have made her go catatonic like some annoying kid that's getting in the way in a horror movie like Dakota Fanning in War of the Worlds of Steven Spielberg. But overall, I mean, Future Man, you know, for 3 seasons, heck, you could watch this whole series over the course of a long weekend. I mean, like I said, 8 episodes are about a half hour. They fluctuate between like 30 to 35 minutes, you know, because it's streaming. You don't have to fit it to a clock for advertisers. But yeah, it'll take you about 4 hours to watch this. You can take about 4 hours to watch the last season. I mean, seriously, if you wanted to just plow through 24 hours, you could watch the whole thing in a day. But, you know, why rush? You got plenty of time. We're all in quarantine and we ain't going anywhere. But I'm going to have to say Future Man season 3 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the new film Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment of Awesomeness on the Radio, talking about movies and television and streaming, getting you through these uncertain times with telling you what you can watch so you can entertain yourself and not have to leave the house and cause problems for other people. Let's jump into one more review. This is actually a movie. It's brand new. It comes out this weekend on demand. It was originally going to have a theatrical release, but they had to pivot to on demand because right in the middle of this coronavirus thing, and there's no theaters to carry it. So this film is called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. And the story is about a girl from rural Pennsylvania who struggles with finding a way to get a safe and legal abortion.
I didn't see you at school today.
I went to the doctor.
What's wrong?
girl problems.
This is the most magical sound you will ever hear.
I'm just not ready to be a mom.
Where else could you go?
Nowhere in Pennsylvania.
Who came with you today?
My cousin.
Do you have a place to stay tonight? I know you came from far away.
I'll figure it out.
A couple months ago, I had a request to review the movie Unplanned, which was a vehemently pro-life movie. It was an anti-abortion film, and it was about Planned Parenthood and this woman who worked there and true story, blah, 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 and how she changed her, had a change of heart and everything. I didn't give it a good review, mainly because it fell into the trappings of a lot of these issue-driven passion projects that oftentimes dovetail into faith-based films as well. So, I mean, I gave it a poor review. And I know some people, I got a little bit of flack because people are, you know, they'll say, well, you know, that's a political. And I'm like, no, it had nothing to do with the politics. My personal politics in the abortion debate had nothing to do with my issues with that movie. My issues with that movie were all movie driven. And if you don't believe me, listen to this review, because here's the one that's vehemently pro-choice. I mean, the purpose of this movie, I truly believe, and I've read, and I think that that's absolutely, it bears out, and when you watch the film, the point of this movie is to show how difficult it is for some people to have access to safe and legal and financially doable abortions. I think that's what they're trying to show, because this, the character, this is a girl, she's in rural Pennsylvania, she works in a supermarket, she doesn't have any money, she works at this job in this weird, creepy supermarket where, like, the manager, they have to hand their money into this slot, and the manager, like, kisses and sniffs the girl's hands as they do that, which I'm sorry, I'm sure that crap goes on, but how is that not getting reported by anybody? How is somebody not bringing their cell phone in there and videotaping that and then posting that on social media? But, you know, I digress. So she's pregnant and she goes to a clinic in town, but and I don't know local abortion law that's not my study, but apparently in this, it's showing that in Pennsylvania, if you're not 18, you got to have a parent's permission. And so she ended up going to New York, or her cousin, they steal money from this supermarket where they work, and they go to New York to get the abortion because they don't have those restrictions in New York City. My biggest problem with the movie is the girl's a blank. She's what I call a Bella. If you've ever seen a movie where there's a character that there's really no defined characterization of them, like Bella in the Twilight movies, where she's just kind of this big ball of nothing, but everyone is focusing on her. And that allows, it's a technique where it allows the audience to put themselves in their shoes, and there's nothing to conflict where their idiosyncrasies don't match. And that's the problem with this girl. She just sort of just mopes around. She barely talks. There's no characterization for her. You see no depth of her. And then when somebody doesn't help her, she just sort of sits there and pouts until somebody puts their own neck on the line for her. And I'm like, regardless, you know, there's a certain point of the movie, I was so frustrated, annoyed with this girl. I was like, I don't care whether you get an abortion or not, because you are the most boring and sulky and mopey-faced character I've ever seen in a movie. And I know that's kind of the point. But the other thing is if you wanted to get a wart removed, you probably need your parents' permission from the doctor if you're a minor. That's a reasonable thing. If you wanted to get an elective surgery like breast augmentation, you probably need the parental consent as well. And I know that there's a lot of arguments and discussions here, but there's not even a discussion of, I mean, I know how she got pregnant, but by which, you know, who's the father? And she has just got this really creepy, I think it's her stepdad, and he's super creepy. Maybe they imply that maybe he had something, but she got mad at a kid at school, and maybe it was his. But I know that a lot of people who are vehemently pro-choice are going to be like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how they got pregnant. They should have access to abortion. And I'm like, it's not a vending machine, people. You can't just say, I want an abortion. Boop, boop, have it done. It's a medical procedure. So there, any medical procedure you get is going to have this. And I think it glosses over that and tosses that aside, and then when they're trying to make it so real and how much danger she gets in, like, there's a whole scene where something happens where they have to do something, and I'm like, it would never have gone down that easy. The movie itself was frustrating, and I knew the point it was trying to make, because it was kind of telegraphed, but I just thought it was so poor at making that point. So I'm gonna have to say that never, rarely, sometimes, always, I thought it sucked.
It sucks.
listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm not doing box office because it's like $3,000 for the entire country. You know, a family of five is going to get a bigger stimulus check than the amount of money that was made in the American box office last week. So we're skipping box office. We're doing the home cinema roundup. And this week's spotlight is on Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. J.J. Abrams directs this finale of the Skywalker saga in which Rey discovers her family roots and the New Order tries to stamp out the Resistance forever.
We're not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
Long have I waited.
Now, I know this is very, very polarizing. Because here's the thing. The Last Jedi was very, very polarizing. And so people who loved where The Last Jedi went were so frustrated where this went. But people who didn't like Last Jedi, like me, one of the worst Star Wars movies ever made, even worse than the Star Wars Holiday Special in some ways. But somebody like me who didn't like The Last Jedi, I loved this one. I thought it was a return to form. I suddenly felt like I was watching a Star Wars movie again. It had the camaraderie. It had the action. Yeah, there's goofy stuff. And yeah, you can nitpick. You can nitpick every single freaking Star Wars movie around. The point of Star Wars is it's fun. It's exciting. It's a space adventure. And it went back to that instead of this being this morose contemplation of everything and trying to destroy what had been built up for seven movies. So yeah, I loved Rise of Skywalker. I rewatched it. It was just fun as heck. And it's unfortunate that they went with Rian Johnson. I don't mind if Rian Johnson got his own thing that had nothing to do with the canon of Star Wars, but he tried to break it up. He tried to be iconoclastic in the middle of laying out the finale. That's stupid. It reminds me, there was a tweet I saw this week where somebody was talking about Alien 3. And they said, I don't get why so many people are so mad at Alien 3 because it destroys the ending of Aliens. Which it does. And she's like, that's kind of what I liked about it. And I'm like, well, then you weren't a fan of it. If your point of liking something like Alien 3, because it completely destroys everything that was set up and built up in the previous film, you're just being an a-hole. You're being a jerk. You're basically saying, oh, I didn't like that last movie. And then this movie, when it dumps all over it and destroys it, I like that because it's that last one. It was not for me. How arrogant and self-centered can you be? And that's the problem with directors like David Fincher with Alien 3 or Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi. Everybody I've ever heard who said they loved The Last Jedi, I mean sat there and said that, oh, you know, Rose was the heart and soul of the film. And literally, I think C-3PO has more lines than Rose in The Rise of Skywalker. But if you love The Last Jedi because it changed all the stuff, you know, like, well, I was never a big Star Wars fan. And I saw The Last Jedi, I go, well, then that's part of it. That shows there's a problem. You know, the Last Jedi changed things. It changed the stuff where it was going. It tried to reroute it. And Abrams spent a lot of time in Rise of Skywalker getting everything back on the track. Because that's where we wanted this thing going in the first place. Make your own sequel. Make your own franchise. Make your own set of films. But don't ruin a franchise just because you're an egomaniacal director. And so, yeah, I have to say, Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, I had a great time watching it again. It comes with a second disc, which has a 2-hour plus documentary, plus behind the scenes of the speeder chase and aliens. It's got a little bit on Dio, that new PTSD robot that they have. It has a little spot with Warwick Davis. And, of course, all the different creatures that are in the Star Wars universe. I had a lot of fun watching this. It's a great end of the 9 movies. At some point, I'm going to watch all 9 of them in order. And who knows? I got plenty of time now. Anyways, I'm just going to have to say that The Rise of Skywalker totally rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Trolls World Tour, which is doing a bold release to on-demand, keeping its theatrical window time frame. Until then, have a fat time at the movies and at home.